This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. It's been an eventful few days, to say the least, with a lot more uncertainty set to come after we saw Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin resigning as Prime Minister on Monday, and he is still currently the caretaker Prime Minister until someone else who is seen to have the support of the majority of the MPs can be appointed as Prime Minister. But as we sort of try to keep up with all these political decisions, the bargaining that's happening, what seems conspicuously absent is the presence of women at the table in making these decisions, and the absence of women's issues being discussed as well when reforms come up. So, well, some might ask, you know, is female representation important at this juncture when there are so many other issues which seem more pressing at hand? Is it important for us to still push forward for changes in when it comes to gender equality, when it comes to women's rights at this point? And here to discuss these are my guests for today, Sumitra Viswanathan, the Executive Director of Women's Aid Organization, as well as Roshini Mukaya, the Campaign Manager for the 111 Initiative. Welcome, ladies. How are you doing today?
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. So, in the midst of all these political action, in the midst of all the decision making, you know, we haven't really seen women being involved at the top, or even being, women MPs being put forward as names as potential Prime Minister candidates, right? Is this surprising to either of you, or perhaps is it not surprising considering how we've been doing when it comes to gender equality at the political scene?
Yeah, well, you know, it's appalling, actually, but unfortunately unsurprising, because women's political participation in Malaysia has always been low. And I would say, unfortunately, it is dipping even further. So the World Economic Forum in the Gender Index, World Gender Index, I think Malaysia was assessed as 128th place out of 156 countries. So that is absolutely appalling. But unsurprising, because if you look at the kind of narratives that are put out there about women, about women's rights, about gender, it's just so slanted, it's misogynistic, it's weighed against women. So yes, women's political participation in Malaysia is very low. But right now, I mean, everything is just stacked against us when it comes to encouraging women to become more politically active, not just at the grassroots level, but also, you know, in Putrajaya. We need to see more of that happening, but it's not.
Roshini, why is it important to have women leaders, and especially young women, to be involved, you know, to be at the decision-making table right now, considering, you know, that we are facing an economic and health crisis on top of all the political instability?
So to answer that question, I would say it is so important to have more women leaders, especially young women, at the forefront, because the fact is this pandemic is affecting all of us, including women, including youth, and I would say disproportionately young women, right? Since the pandemic began, there has been such a high rise in violence against women, there's been increased poverty. Young girls have been losing meaningful years of learning because of distance learning. You know, even working women are now reporting having so much difficulties due to having to deal with childcare and domestic duties while still having to maintain their professional and economic output. This is why we need more young women in the leadership space to champion these issues, to highlight these issues, and to provide creative solutions, right? There's only a minority that we have right now in the current lineup of government. I think one example was, for example, in the previous parliamentary sitting, we had YB Kasturi. I think she was the one of the few or the only one that at least I saw that was trying to do something and to highlight, you know, domestic abuse and, you know, having more responses to mental health issues. So if this country is serious about offering meaningful and representative solutions to this crisis, this is why we need more leadership to reflect the diversity of our society. And that is inclusive of young people and also women.
I guess I want to press on that a bit more, right? Does age matter? Because once in a while we'll see names like Tan Sri Rafidah Aziz as, being brought up as a potential PM candidate, right? So, does age matter if we are looking for better women representation?
I think most definitely, yes. When we're talking about certain issues, we always have to take a very empathetic lens, right? For example, when looking at policies, there's a gender lens, but I think you also have to take a youth lens. And this, I think a simple example that I can give is, for example, in an education lens. The way the education syllabus that I experienced when I was in school is vastly different to the teenagers nowadays. And I would assume that if you're a much older candidate, you might be slightly out of touch, or you might be unfamiliar with the current syllabus. So how can you be making improvements and changes if you yourself do not know the current experience of students, right? So this is why it is always important to have young people at the helm of the leadership to give their input and to give their very real perspectives.
So then, you know, Sumitra, when we look at things like resource management or budgeting, specific in Malaysia especially, what areas do you think better women representation or even a woman prime minister would focus on that we haven't seen before or that would be better than what we've seen so far? You know, are there examples perhaps that we could look to from other countries with women leaders?
Yes, well, you know, the first thing that comes to mind really is New Zealand. And then also Iceland. But, you know, it's really about women's issues, gender issues. It's everyone's issue, right? Because we know that by ensuring gender equality, like, for instance, by increasing women's economic participation, you actually add so much more value to our GDP. So, you know, facilitating women to come back to work, for instance, or even broadening spaces, making it possible for women to not just remain in the workforce, but also to have access to economic opportunities, makes sense for everybody. So yes, we can look to New Zealand, we can look to Iceland, but you know what? Let's look within Malaysia. And absolutely right what Roshini says, it's really about ensuring that broad representation and recognizing all of the intersectionalities. So yes, women, important, yes, but also women who are younger, women who are older, women who have different kinds of abilities, differently abled women, all of those voices need to be represented. And, you know, lived realities. Exactly so. Lived realities are so important. How can we have a truly representational government, a truly representational parliament, if we do not understand that our perceptions, our actions, our thoughts are colored by our experiences? And women experience inequality in so many different ways because women are not homogenous. We have different kinds of characteristics, we have different sorts of experiences. So increasing women's participation at all levels, including in the political sphere, is absolutely critical. When it comes to budgeting, gender-responsive budgeting. Mm-hmm. Gender-responsive budgeting is the key. We need to see this happen. It's not just about making a particular peruntukan untuk wanita dari B40 or so on and so forth. It's not only that. You can't just do that. It needs to be mainstreamed. That commitment to equality, that commitment to women's equality, that commitment to hearing and representing and mainstreaming all voices. Where does it start? It starts really from mindsets, yes, but it needs to go into the money. We need to see it represented in Treasury, in the budget, how the government spends, what commitment the government is making to make gender equality a reality in Malaysia. Start with that. Gender responsive budgeting. Let's see that. This new government, do that.
What examples would you be able to give when it comes to gender responsive budgeting, you know, just to give people a better idea of what that looks like?
Okay, so we can talk about you know, women's economic empowerment, but let's just look at something that we see as a low-hanging fruit, and that is ensuring that we have a comprehensive solution to address and eradicate gender-based violence, like domestic violence, for instance, okay? So we know that it's a public health issue. Domestic violence and other forms of gender-based violence, but again, specifically domestic violence, is a pandemic within a pandemic. It's a global phenomenon right now. WHO has also termed it as the hidden pandemic on which COVID has shone a spotlight. So let's address that. By addressing gender-based violence, like domestic violence, you are actually also empowering women to reclaim rights, to reclaim space, so that they can also then have that opportunity to participate more equally in the economic sphere. What does that mean? That means putting money into clinic kesihatans at the primary care level, where there will be better identification, better response given at the moment it is most needed by women. So that's basically one example. Understanding what are women's experiences, understanding what are the barriers that are being faced by women right now, and understanding what is the low-hanging fruit, what is something so easy that we can do now, put money in now, because, you know, you don't just see short-term effects, you see medium-term effects, and you see long-term positive impact on the Malaysian economy. Gender-responsive budgeting encourages policymakers to think like that for everyone, not just for women.
All right. Let's go for a very quick break now. I'm speaking today to Sumitra Viswanathan, the Executive Director of the Women's Aid Organisation, as well as Roshni Mukaya, the Campaign Manager of the 111 Initiative. And today we're talking about better women's political representation in Malaysia and the need to address women's rights issues in the midst of the political instability and uncertainty that we're facing right now. Keep it here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Su. And today we are talking about whether Malaysia is progressing or regressing when it comes to better female political representation, when it comes to addressing women's rights issues that have emerged during the pandemic in the last 17 months, and how, you know, all of this is important right now when we are facing so much political uncertainty, when we have, when we currently have no cabinet and no prime minister, we only have an interim prime minister, and why, you know, we want to get to the bottom of why this is still important for us to talk about now. You know, it's not something that can be put on the back burner simply because we are facing multiple crises at the same time. And what I want to touch on now is, you know, the importance of, you know, I guess what we see sometimes is perhaps a more tokenistic approach to it, you know, simply having women at the table, but other people are not necessarily listening to them, or they might not be, I guess, the right person to be sort of in those positions, right? I guess, is it important to have the right women there as well, and to have other people at the decision-making table who are willing to listen also?
Most definitely. I think you need both kinds of representation. I think here, I'm going to go slightly academic, if that's okay. When we're talking about representation, there's two kinds of representation. First is what we call descriptive representation, meaning these are people who are women, they have womanly characteristics and experiences, right? And that's what we have right now. We look towards womanisters who are descriptive representatives of women community. And then there's a second kind, what we call substantive representations. This refers to anyone who is acting in the interest of the group and they're championing the issues related to the group. In this case, we're talking about, it could be the male politicians who are also highlighting issues that are important to the women community. Mm-hmm. In the case of governance, I think it's very, very important to have both, actually. But at the moment, unfortunately, right now, we don't really have much of either. At the moment, the responsibility, it still lies in the minority of women politicians to be both descriptive and also substantive representatives of women issues. The fact is, you know, women at the end of the day, we have such niche lived experiences that greatly contrast the lived experiences of men, which always gives women the unique perspectives that need to be taken into consideration when planning and implementing policies that will affect them. So I think, yes, it's important to have, you know, what we call just general people who are, regardless of gender, championing women issues. But I think there's so much value in having what we call descriptive representation, i.e. actual women and minorities talking about these issues in such a high level of leadership in Malaysia.
So following on that, right, you will have critics who argue that, well, does it matter then we have, you know, an X number of female MPs at the table when we have male MPs who are also championing the same issue. You know, what's your response to that?
I always find it surprising because they always say gender doesn't matter. Well, it should purely be on merit. But the thing is, if it was purely based on merit, we wouldn't be having this conversation. It wouldn't be surprising to have more women in these spaces. But no one is really questioning that at the moment, unfortunately. I still think it is super important to have equal representatives of women minorities. And I'm sorry, there should be equal representation of women and minorities, similar as to men as well in these tables.
You know, if I can just chime in there, you know, how powerful is it for a young girl or young women to see a woman standing up, standing strong, speaking on behalf of other women, yes, but also speaking on issues that affect everyone in a way that is inclusive, that is transformative, that breaks stereotypes. We need to see women, girls being inspired by figures like that so that they can also venture into politics, venture into leadership roles, claim space, there's space out there, claim space that is safe for them to grow and develop their own political views, their own political stances, and their own political profiles. Right now, spaces are not safe for women and girls to speak up. We know that, right? Mm. And there's so much hate, there's so much misogyny, and there's so much stalking that goes on online, for instance, that really shuts down women's voices, girls' voices, that also needs to be addressed.
Yes, and we've seen that not only online, in person, we've also seen that happening to our women MPs in Parliament itself, right? And that, and I guess that really reflects the need for better understanding of why we need representation, why we need, you know, better gender equality at all levels and not just, you know, a tokenistic approach to it. You know, you mentioned stalking, Sumitra, and I guess from there, I want to jump on another perspective on what we're talking about today, which are the issues, right? And if we take a bigger picture look, what are some of the main issues that have emerged during the pandemic, or I guess what are some of the main issues that have been exacerbated by the pandemic and in the past 17 months, you know, what has stood out to you? What needs to be addressed immediately?
Yes, absolutely. So I think we need to see that gender equality law being passed. It's been delayed for far too long. We need to see the amendments to the criminal procedure, criminal laws in Malaysia, so that stalking is also made a crime. We need to see the tabling of the sexual harassment bill, so that we can actually, you know, do something to make workspaces safer for women, so that women can come back to the workforce, women can stay in the workforce, and our economy can grow. But I want to circle back to the one thing that has really hit women hardest. Actually, two things that hit women hardest. Number one is in their livelihoods. And number two is the rise of gender-based violence, specifically domestic violence. So WAO, for instance, since the start of the pandemic, we have seen a rise in calls to our crisis hotlines by 275%. In the first 6 months of this year alone, we received 1,572 calls to our hotline. In 1 week, we rescued 12 women from abusive households. So, you know, that is a crisis. Women and children are unsafe in their homes because they are forced to continue living with survivors. We've seen survivors going back to abusive households because they feel that they are unable to live independently. So, yes, address that as a crisis. It is a pandemic crisis that needs to be addressed immediately. And we need to see laws being tabled that are going to move the needle further forward for gender equality in our country. That is so critically important.
Hmm. Have you seen adequate responses towards, you know, addressing these two issues that you mentioned during the past 17 months of the Perikatan National Administration? You know, when it comes to livelihoods, when it comes to gender-based violence, has enough been done to address these issues?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There's so much that the government could have done yes, you know, we saw in those initial, you know, one or two messages coming out from MKN, you know, saying domestic violence is a crime. If you're facing domestic violence, please call this number, and so forth. But not enough. WAO is actually in partnership with the Ministry of Health through the CPRC, that emergency working group. And yes, they push out our number, calls to the MOH hotline that are addressing domestic violence issues, referred onwards to WAO. Yes, we have that working relationship, but we need to see an all of government approach. We need to see violence against women and initiatives to address violence against women become part of the narrative, part of the mainstream when you are talking about disaster management, pandemic management, disaster response. Majlis Keselamatan Negara needs to understand that violence against women is endemic in Malaysia, and it has become even more pronounced during COVID-19, during this health crisis. And they need to address it as a systematic problem that requires a systematic response. Unless and until that is done, women will continue to feel unsafe. Girls and children will continue to feel unsafe. It's about society, right? It's about keeping society safe from harm. It's not just about that virus. It's also about the harms that we perpetrate against each other. That needs to be considered, that needs to be recognized, and that needs to be responded to comprehensively. I've not seen that.
Yeah, I think also here, I would like to highlight about the case of Ayn, right? The youth whistleblower who exposed rape culture that was happening in public schools. There was such a, you know, important conversation and dialogue happening online and offline about it. Yet we saw little to no meaningful response from the ministry, either the Ministry of Education or, you know, the Ministry of Women and Children under Perikatan National Government. Not much of a statement, nor comprehensive aid or any assertive policy recommendations were being put forward. And pairing all of this with the fact that Parliament was being suspended, in that 1 week of Parliament special sitting, there was still no space that was given to ask these questions from a gender lens, right, in respective to the National Recovery Plan, the vaccine, the stimulus package. And there was just no space to even question the Ministry of Women and Children to ask about any of this. So that was quite disappointing, actually.
Hmm.
Yeah, and if I can just add on to that, and you know, part of the problem is this power play. It's about power. It's always about power. Who has power in Putrajaya? Who has the most number of parliamentarians? Who has this? Who has that? It's about power. You know what? Right now, it's about people. It's not about power. It's about people. It's about making sure we as Malaysians are safe, that we are physically safe, that we are economically safe, that we are safe even in our own diverse political opinions that we want to express safely. Even with regards to that, there's a big question mark. Are we safe? This, whoever is coming into power, whoever is going to be sitting in power, needs now to make sure that they focus on the people. Focus on the people. Less on power, more on people.
Hmm. Is there also a need to look at it from a more localized perspective? Because often I think we speak of it as a general issue, but do we need to look at it from state to state, whether from community to community these issues are different, or can we sort of look at them homogeneously as something that is happening across Malaysia?
Yes, absolutely. It needs to be localized. And again, you know, if we go back to that issue of gender, the approach of gender responsive budgeting, for instance, if we mainstream gender as a consideration, as a critical consideration in all aspects of government, and that means, you know, not just about what happens in Putrajaya, not just about what happens in Parliament, but what happens in Kampung X, Y, and Z, what happens in Taman ABC, you know, it's about an approach, and it's about a mindset, and it's about a commitment. So I think one of the amazing things that seems to have come up from the COVID pandemic is that we have all, yes, we have retreated into our own communities and our own localities, but we seem to be so much more invested in what happens locally. You know, I mean, in how many different tamans have people reached out to each other to say, hey, if you're having problems, hey, I'm cooking some food. Hey, come over. Hey, or not come over, but, you know, can I send you something? You know, and people contributing the kita jaga kita, hello, we can, you know, all of that. We really seem to be in our grassroots mode, and we need the government to recognize that and to respond to that better than they are now.
And that is how we can build on that grassroots activity that is happening now, right? Because of the pandemic, because of how invested we've been in each of our own communities, that can be built on so that we have a better whole of society, whole of government approach when it comes to addressing women's rights issues. Because often when we talk about things like gender-based violence, you know, people in the community are more likely to be in touch, to be aware if something isn't right or if something feels off, and then to be able to provide the right intervention. You know, they would know how to help rather than having someone who might not be familiar about what's happening, who doesn't know the individual, to just jump in and offer help, right?
Yeah, and we actually, WAO actually has a program that we call Community Selamat, which is exactly that. So it's really about building capacities of local communities, identifying influences within those communities that we will train to recognize, respond, and refer onwards survivors of domestic violence. And yes, it's a localized response. It's making sure that the entire network at the local level is trained, is capacitated, and is able to recognize, respond, and refer cases of domestic violence. And in doing all of that, what we also do is we raise awareness and we change mindsets to reject violence against women and children.
And now moving on to reforms, you mentioned briefly a bit of it, Sumitra, earlier, you know, things like the sexual harassment bill, the anti-stalking law, the Gender Equality Act. These are bills that, you know, WAO and the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality have been pushing for years, but we haven't seen much progress. I guess my question to both of you is, regardless of who is selected as Prime Minister next, who forms the next government, what are the main reforms that you would like to see being prioritised and addressed as soon as possible? Whether, you know, when it comes to issues that women are facing in their community, in their lives, or when it comes to political reforms as well?
Yeah, so, you know, the draft legislation is done. The Gender Equality Act, or also known as the Anti-Discrimination Against Women Act, the Sexual Harassment Bill, it's drafted. You know, let's table it. Criminalizing stalking, it's ready. Table it. So those are the things that are already done. It just needs to be tabled. It needs to be debated, and it needs to be committed to. Very simple. Let's get that done. And then, you know, budget 2022, take that gender responsive approach towards budgeting, because it's not just about women. It's about everyone. If you empower women, economically, politically, socially, culturally, Malaysia will benefit.
Roshini, what about political reforms for equal gender representation? You know, what would you like to see?
In terms of, I would like to propose some election reform. I think specifically in reducing the barrier to even enter politics. At the moment, there's such a high cost to even enter and contest in the political race. So to tackle this is why we need Political Finance Act, right? The reason being, the way that a political party right now decides whether a person gets a seat as a candidate or not, it is still largely based on what this person can bring to the table, right? Can they bring us more monetary contributions or something? Unfortunately, it is not purely merit-based. And this is just something traditionally men have access to because they have the privilege, right? Then we have the other case of, for a person to climb the party ladder and to be in the senior leadership of politicians, the person also needs to campaign a lot and win a lot of party elections, which costs a lot of money out of the person's own pocket. And again, traditionally, men have access to that as well. So without proper political financing in place, the entry barrier to politics will be here to stay. And therefore, women will just never, ever be on the same level playing field as men. To add on to that, to add on to election reform, I think it's super, super important that we revamp the Malaysian political culture in general, starting simply by creating a professional, a gender-sensitive parliament for all, some at least a parliament that we can be proud of. And at a macro level, at a societal level, we need to review how we're viewing and perceiving girls and women, to question why is it so hard for us to view them as capable leaders. We need to ask ourselves, are we intentionally making space and encouraging this woman to speak up and take up space in leadership positions?
Do you think the society is accepting, is open to the idea of having more women in these key decision-making positions, or even to having a women prime minister?
Honestly, I would like to say yes, but the truth is I really think that they don't like it, Sue Ann. Even though it is perfectly legal and possible to have even a female prime minister. And to give you a quote, some time ago, my colleague Kira from Undi 18, you know, she was involved in this video where they had a simple discussion. Can a woman be a prime minister? And the reactions and the comments that were really negative. They were very sexist and they were very hateful because they just can't believe that it can be done. And this is why, you know, 101 initiative was created, because people were just so insistent and focusing purely on merit and not gender when making leadership selection. Maybe it's a case of Malaysian culture, right? Just not having a strong track record of female, of strong female leaders in politics. Right now, we only have like a handful. Mm-hmm. Even though it's perfectly legal and possible, the concept just is very alien. It's very strange. And for some people, it is threatening to society. You know, hence, this is why, you know, 101 Initiative, we're just trying our hardest to normalize female leadership in politics in Malaysia. But again, it's still a long way to go.
What will it take for us to change? You know, what are some small steps that we can take to sort of chip away at the mindset that many of us still have, the stereotypes that we still hold?
I think this is where we need, you know, all members of the community to come in to support this, right? I know right now a lot of attention and responsibility is put on women to uplift ourselves. You're the one who has to speak up more. You're the one who has to talk about these issues and take up space. But going back to what I said earlier, you know, men and other members of the society also have to reflect and ask themselves, am I intentionally giving you space in the first place? Am I giving you the tools and the resources and the platform to talk about these issues openly and confidently? You know, on 101 Initiative side, something that we are trying to do is create more educational programs to encourage more young girls and young women to explore politics safely and confidently. So if it's okay for me to just quickly plug it in, you know, 101 Initiative, sometime later this week, we are going to be launching our new program. It is called Siri Kandi. It is a 3-month capacity building program for 100 young girls and young women who are interested, who are beginners, and they're interested to learn about politics in Malaysia. So if that's interest, please feel free to look up the 101 Initiative social medias.
Sumitra, what would you like to see from, you know, the Rakyat, or even what role do you see civil society organizations playing in pushing for better women representation in politics and better acceptance of it as well?
Yeah, so civil society can actually start by increasing women's representation in leadership in civil society, especially civil rights and political rights civil society groups. We need to see more women in those spaces as well. I would say, you know, let's look at schools. Let's look at how we are teaching, what we are teaching, and how are we empowering kids in school, right? So it's really about making empowerment and creating spaces for diverse opinions, for diverse views, for growth, and understanding that equality is our creed. I feel that it needs to start in school. And, you know, addressing that safe space in school to start off with is actually a good way forward. Ensuring that there is a credible science-based sex education in school that also incorporates issues related to gender, gender equality, consent, rights over your own self, your own body, your own mind. start with that, because, you know, by signing on to CRC, for instance, Malaysia has made a commitment to ensuring child participation to its fullest extent, right? So let's start in schools. Let's build that commitment to equality, the acceptance of diversity, but that we are all one, we are all included. We all have space to be included. Start there. I think that really this is a long-term struggle. Party politics in Malaysia, as it stands right now, there are so many barriers in place, not structural barriers, attitudinal barriers, so many barriers in place that prevent women from heading and leading political parties. I mean, just again, just look at that moment, you know, that sobering moment in Parliament recently where a woman MP, you know, Hannah Yeo, who was trying to make a point very calmly, very steadfastly, and she was just told to diam, like, no. That can you change that kind of mindset in Parliament right now? It's going to be really hard. So it's a long-term struggle. It starts in school. And let's address gender equality. Let's address empowerment. Let's address rights. Let's do that from school. It's a long-term struggle, but we'll get there.
And before we end, I would like to ask both of you, are you hopeful that we will, you know, that we are moving towards a Malaysia that will see better gender equality, that will see better women representation at all levels?
I'm always hopeful, Sue-Ann. That's one thing that I will never lose. I'm like Pandora. The only thing left in the box is hope.
I completely agree. I mean, I would like to say I have careful optimism. Mm-hmm. I think we can only focus on what is within our control. And I think as long as we have, you know, activists, educators, you know, and all members of society, well, some members of society trying to make it better, I think there's always hope that we can hold on to.
And for the rest of us, there's always more that we can learn, right? It's you know, continuing to educate ourselves, continuing to speak to people who are, you know, willing to share their perspectives, and for us to listen to their experiences and not just impose our own thoughts, our own views on them. And on that note, thank you so much to both of you, to Sumitra and Roshni, for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Sue-Ann.
I've been speaking to Sumitra Viswanathan, the Executive Director of the Women's Aid Organisation, and Roshni Mukaya, the Campaign Manager for the 111 Initiative, on how we need better women representation, especially in the political scene in Malaysia, amidst all the instability and uncertainty that we are facing today. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download the podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.